Welcome. You are listening to the Better Together podcast with Callie and Rosario Picardo. We take on topics involving marriage, ministry, parenting, communication, relationships, and other subjects that our listeners want to hear more about.
Welcome to another edition of the Better Together podcast. I'm your co-host, Rosario Picardo.
And I'm Callie Picardo, your other co-host. And we have an exciting guest with us today. We have Pastor Scott Crosstech. And Scott is at Church of the Resurrection, the largest church in the United Methodist denomination here in the United States. And he serves there as their executive director of ministries and programs across their network of churches. Before that, he was the lead pastor of their downtown campus. He's an author, he's a husband, he's a dad, and he has written a new book for Advent that we're really excited to talk about today. The book is called Advent, A Season of Surprises. Scott, welcome to the Better Together podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah. So, Scott, you've written books and we know you're a busy guy. So what was the burden or what was the desire to want to write something like this Advent resource?
Well, I had never written like an Advent resource. I've never written like a church resource. All of the books I've written previously have been more about kind of like the spiritual walk or the journey or the like life of discipleship. This was an invitation that I received that I wanted to tackle because it was a new opportunity, something I'm passionate about. I love the season of Christmas, Advent, and to be able to use that passion and that invitation to maybe equip churches and individuals with a heightened sense of where God is during this season is something that drove me. Also, everything that I do always kind of goes into ministry or back into ministry. And so one of the things that's been really exciting at Resurrection is we've been engaged in a generation-to-generation campaign. And this opportunity came around as a way for me to participate in and to be used by God to help create spaces and places for the next generation at our church. And so so it was a project that allowed me to participate in an over and above kind of set apart kind of way for our church as we look ahead to the next generation. So it's been just kind of a fun project altogether.
Well, I love that you have the tagline that it's a season of surprises. If I'm honest, though, sometimes Christmas becomes like more routine, more tradition. We've always done it this way. We have to do it this way. But you call it a season of surprises. Unpack that for us.
Yeah. So kind of when I was thinking about setting out to invite people on a journey during this season, the thing that seems to be so characteristic of all of our experience of Advent today in America would be like its predictability. So I don't know about your neighborhoods, but like where I live, like you can almost predict starting in like the beginning of November, which houses on your street are going to put up their lights and at what point in time. And it's sequential and it's predictable. And it's not like people change their outside decor. It's like the same decor, the same setup year over year. And when it goes up, it's like, oh, it's up. Now we can get started. And now you know who's next. Or we have like our rituals that we love, right? So we have, everybody has opinions, strong opinions. You always say there's no wrong answer, but there are wrong answers for when you ask people what their favorite Christmas movie is. I guess if I were to ask you what your favorite Christmas movie is, Roz and Callie, you might have the same answer or you might have different answers. I'm curious, what is your favorite Christmas movie?
I think I would have to say Elf.
Elf? That's a great story. Great movie. Callie, is that yours too?
That is probably the one I watch most years. But if I were, my true favorite is It's a Wonderful Life. But I don't
know. Both classics. And so like, there's a lot of people that get really passionate about Die Hard and you're either like for it or against it, or you think about some of the others that people like loathe or love. And, but we have our favorites and it's nostalgic and it's predictable. And same thing with music, same thing with cookies. Like people have their favorite Christmas cookie, their sweet treat that they want to eat. Mm-hmm. Mine, I never know the name of it, but it's that peanut butter cookie that you put a little Hershey's Kiss on top of.
Yes. Those are good.
They're the best. And if you disagree, then you're wrong. And it's like one of those guys. So when you think about the predictability or the tradition of it all, And then there's the Christmas Eve routines and the, you know, where do we go? What house do we go to celebrate Christmas? But when you think about that experience and compare that with the season of Advent or the story of the coming of Jesus, Christ's birth, what you recognize is that the only thing that seems to bind every figure together is that nobody saw it coming. Like it was a total disruption to any sort of predictable pattern or hoped for pattern of life. And so what does it mean that during this season of surprise where the unifying or common thread is disruption or surprise or disappointment or good news, right? What does it say that we love the season for its predictability? And so that juxtaposition or that tension between the two realities is what I really try to like invite people into. And the driving question of Advent for me is like, what surprise does God have in store for you? Because Advent isn't just about remembering what happened or who we are or the patterns or the traditions. I mean, Christ is already born. It's also about remembering that we're in the story looking ahead to the second coming. And just like God interrupted Mary to bring about the advent of Christ, the birth of Christ, God is trying to interrupt us as we build the kingdom of heaven here on earth, as we prepare for the second coming. And that's, I think, the thing that we need to hold on to, not like what we have experienced, the familiarity, the pattern, the predictability. We need to be inviting God to surprise us in the same way, and to believe that God will surprise us in the same way. And all those surprises that happen during the season aren't good surprises. Like Joseph was disrupted with the news from his fiance that she was carrying a child and it wasn't his. And like, that's not a welcome disruption.
No.
Like he went into like his own little personal crisis, right? Like he's trying to decide, what am I going to do here? Can't talk about it with other people. And like that's his Advent journey. And my guess is some of us have those similar kinds of negative disruptions. And then sometimes good things happen, and it's almost like they're too good to be true. You think about Zechariah and Elizabeth; they walked that cold, lonely road of like infertility for a long time. And then when Zechariah is greeted and finds out that he's going to have a child finally, it's like he didn't even that's a great disruption. Like he got the news that he wanted, that they'd been praying for maybe like decades, generations, And then when they got it, they didn't believe it. They weren't open to it. Mm-hmm. And then he's rendered mute during one of the most, like, I don't know, tender times in a marriage. Mm-hmm. Like, think about it. Roz, if you were rendered mute when Callie was carrying your first child that you've been long waiting for, like, that would create some family dynamics that aren't good.
Mm-hmm. He'd have to listen to me and not try to fix anything. He just have to listen.
That's He'd be giving you the silent treatment the whole time.
Right.
Yeah. It's just so like I think how do we live into that and unearth that and deal with our own propensity to need to control everything. Yeah. And I find that when we let go of that need to control or that need for predictability or pattern or tradition, not that it's bad, but it sometimes limits us from something that we can't imagine, something that God might have in store for us that's totally new.
How has this, if any way, changed you at all in your approach to Advent as you've written about it, put yourself in the different character shoes as you're writing, thinking about surprises? What has, you know, God done inside of you in this?
Yeah, I think personally, like I can tell you some surface level anecdotes that are like easy answers. So I've been talking to a lot of people as I've been going through this, and I've been inviting people to share their favorite, rhythms or those moments that kind of give them purpose during this time or meaning, significance. And so I ask people like what their favorite song is, or I ask people what their favorite, just try to tease out their opinions. And so just surprisingly, like I have my favorites. But as I've been listening to other people share theirs, like, and they offer suggestions, I spent time with a group of men, and one of the guys said, hands down, Good King Wenceslas is my favorite Christmas song. And so I'm like, that's kind of a jovial, you know, kind of like old hymn that I don't ever pay much attention around, never focused on the words. And he's like, yes, it's my favorite. And he goes through this whole story of how this is like Christ, the king, inviting us to follow in his footsteps, to find the feast. And And it's how God, you know, humbles himself and reaches out to the poor peasant who needs to, you know, kind of, and I'm like, oh my gosh, it's not this jovial little, you know, song that's nice to play around, you know, the Christmas time with trumpets and what, you know, but it's like a meaningful thing. And I would have never opened to it because I'm so focused on, you know, my song, whatever those are. And so that's a little anecdote, but I'll tell you the thing that has been most striking for me this Advent is recognizing that some of the most pivotal moments in my life mm-hmm. happened by way of disruption and by way of surprise. So I was intent when we have new staff come and join our team here at Resurrection, I'll try to take them their first day or their second day to kind of, you know, congratulate them, but also get to know them and really kind of build them up as they start their journey here at the church. And one of the questions I always will ask them around lunch is, did you ever imagine that you'd be working at a church, participating, you know, in this life-changing ministry when you were like 5 or 6 years old? And you know, predictably, everybody says no, because like, who wants to be a church worker when they're like 5 or 6 years old?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Maybe some people do. Maybe the two of you did. But I'm no. I'm not sure I did. And
maybe our kids, because they are PKs growing up that way. But most kids, astronaut, teacher, firefighter, yeah. I don't know, something fun and adventuresome.
Poppy, my 3-year-old, she is between like a cow or a teacher. Like if you ask her, what do you want to be when you grow up? She'll be like a cow or she'll be a teacher. And it's just kind of like, I knew I wanted to be a trader on Wall Street. And then I wanted to attend the University of Michigan. I knew those two things when I was like 5 or 6, like I was ready to go and I was driven and I've never played football, but I love the helmets. I love the Michigan helmets and I grew up in Michigan. So, but I knew I wanted to be at the school with those helmets and I knew I wanted to go to Wall Street to be a trader. And so this was never a part of my deal. Mm-hmm. My little sister gave me a phone call and like, you know, relationships with your siblings, like, don't ever think about those phone calls, but she called me and she wanted me to help her in her youth group. She got hooked into the church. I was never really hooked into the church growing up, but she was hooked into the church because a middle school student friend of hers invited her. Mm-hmm. And so she started participating in youth group and she wanted me, her older brother, to help drive a church van. Mm-hmm. So she can go to like a metro park, a beach day at youth group over the summer. And that little invitation kind of set me on a trajectory where I began to first of all, like know what the church is and then get involved with students who are part of the church and then grow to realize that maybe one day that was more important than what I was doing in finance and investments. And then that one little call, disruption, I wasn't open to it, wasn't anticipating it, had no intention on becoming like a volunteer or connected to the church. And yet, like, that's what God had in store. Mm-hmm. Took me away from that thing I was set on, my future that I had planned, which was a trader on Wall Street. And that's the, like, one, I would say that's one of the best moments of my life. And it was probably an afterthought for her. Yeah. She didn't know what she was doing when she called me. I didn't know what I was doing when I said yes.
Yeah.
And yet that kind of one moment became a disruption. The other thing, my wife, she's a pastor on staff here. And I met her at Duke Divinity School. And while we were there, I didn't know I wanted to be a pastor. I thought I'd work with my background in finance and investments. I thought I'd work for an endowment. I thought I'd work for like maybe the Duke Endowment, or maybe some sort of like philanthropic organization that would invest and leverage resources to make a big difference. And I was going to use my 3 years of seminary just to kind of be like, not a monastic, but to have a 3-year sabbatical where I could just create this theological foundation, transition my career and imagine a new way forward. And I was pretty set on that. And I was pretty set that I wouldn't spend any time with like girls. I was single at the time and I wasn't interested in dating. Mm-hmm. And I met Wendy in October of our first year. I got her basketball tickets. And so we started dating like four months. And then I got my first pastoral appointment as a student pastor. And I was appointed to this rural church in the middle of nowhere, North Carolina, and Apple Country, Dana, North Carolina, single wide trailer, no technology, no anything. I could receive incoming calls on a landline, but there was no answering machine. And I remember like thinking, how am I going to like do this? The congregation was less than 50 in attendance, over 80 in age, and I had no preaching ability, meaning I'd never preached a message at that point in time. Mm-hmm. And I'm not supposed to lead this group of people that are nothing like me in this town, in this trailer, no connection to the outside world. And so I told Wendy, I'm like, Wendy, this is going to either make or break me. Mm-hmm. And then I said to her, and in reality, this is either going to make or break us. Because mm-hmm. I don't know how we're going to stay connected. And I just was so closed off to that experience. And would you know it, like the only person that could manage to get through to me in that little single wide trailer was Wendy. She called and I happened to be there. And so I picked up the phone and she called me. I answered and we had a conversation. And then I said to her, hey, I think the Detroit Pistons are playing basketball. They were like a big deal in 2004.
Oh yeah.
And, that was like Big Ben Wallace, Chauncey Billups, like the whole deal. And I said, can you like turn on the game? Because she had access to TV. She was working in a big church that was engaged in a capital campaign, the place where I wanted to be. And so she started doing play-by-play. She hates sports, but she started calling the Pistons playoff games that whole season. They won the finals, but she was getting animated. She like was like talking about Chauncey Billups and Big Ben and the Beach Shack and Kobe and all that. And so at the end of that summer, like I realized that I had fallen in love with Wendy and that we were, you know, making each other better together kind of. And so I had resolved to, propose that coming fall. And at the same time, because of all of the settings and surroundings, there was no distractions. Like I fell in love with those people. I found my voice and I realized that maybe God was calling me into pastoral ministry, that that it wasn't about finance or investments, but it was about loving people with the love of God and trying to do my best to represent God to the world around me and through the love of Christ. And so I had one of those moments, but it was a place that I didn't want to go in a vocation or a setting that I didn't want to, kind of be a part of. And it just like kind of hit me by surprise, right? And that I would say that is also one of the best encounters that I've ever had that I couldn't see coming. Wow. And so I think that like those realizations, none of those things are in my book, but like those kinds of realizations have emerged as I've been engaging in conversation with people who are going through this book and talking about it. But
I love it. I'm sure some of the listeners right now are thinking about some of their surprises, some of the things that they didn't plan, and all of a sudden they're like, mm-hmm. If that didn't happen, I wouldn't be where I am right now.
Yeah.
I think it's still though really easy to get stuck. I mean, how do we become more interruptible? How do we open ourselves up to surprises in this season? I mean, some of them happen to us whether we want them to or not, both good mm-hmm. and bad. But how do we not miss those moments?
Well, so that's where I'm like a little eccentric. So I start listening to Christmas music on November 1st. Uh-huh. And I do that because music for me kind of speaks and communicates. It takes me on a journey, and a part of that journey with Christmas music is a reminder of the Christmas story. And so, like when people say their favorite Christmas song, like there's a very like subset strong group of people very opinionated that love "Mary, Did You Know?"
Yeah.
And then there's a lot of people that do not like that. But like when you start to hear that song, "Did You Know?" Like, no, we don't know. Like, we don't know. So that story, that song kind of speaks to the element of surprise that we all have. And so listening to music reminds me, right? So that's a spiritual practice. It's something that can guide us. Like when I'm driving and I'm listening to music. Now, it's not like Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer or like Frosty the Snowman, like that kind of stuff. But, you know, like
that. That doesn't speak to you through Rudolph, Scott?
Well, let me tell you, it does. I love Rudolph. So my favorite movie is Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of a quasi movie, more of like a made for TV movie. But mm-hmm. I love that story. And I have that as one of my focuses inside one of the chapters, because that is the Christmas story in miniature.
Yes.
And most people don't know it as such, because it's like Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. But when you dive into the backstory of how that story came to be, mm-hmm. And the journey that Robert May had working for Montgomery Ward, and the time and the season in which he was invited to come up with an idea that would save Montgomery Ward as they were emerging from the heels of the Great Depression. Mm-hmm. Like that story alone speaks the gospel and how you have to be open to surprise. You guys are not in Chicago. You're in Ohio. But like, if you've been to Chicago, which is close, just a driving distance from you, like, you know how foggy it gets on the water of Lake Michigan in the winter months. And this guy is sitting charged with this high profile opportunity in his 30s after the Depression, when his wife is diagnosed with terminal cancer.
Oh, wow. Mm.
And he's like, you can imagine trying to come up with a big idea when you're walking through the threat of death in your family with the people that you love the most. Like, he can't come up with an idea. He's sitting at the top of his high-rise building, looking out over the foggy landscape of Lake Michigan, just trying to make sense of what God is going to do through him, with him, what's going to become of his life. And he sees a lighthouse shining through the fog in the distance. And he has this idea for this, like, reindeer who has a nose so bright that's going to cut through the fog, that's going to save Christmas, that's going to make a way forward. And it's out of like this thing that makes him different. And his wife dies.
Oh.
And he has a decision to make. Do I go forward or do I not go forward with this idea? Do I carry forward or do I not carry forward? And he carries forward, and it becomes like the best best promotion for Montgomery Ward ever. But the best selling children's book, the best selling Christmas song of all time, because his brother-in-law, knew Gene Autry and said, "Hey, we should put this song, the story to song." And I mean, it's just like this wild thing. But this guy was faced with disruptive news of a terminal cancer, juxtaposed against the best assignment any 30-year-old marketing executive could ever imagine receiving, right? The Christmas marketing plan or campaign or pitch. And he has to find his way forward. How do we open ourselves to surprise? I think it looks like creating spaces and devices that will remind you that our best work comes through God's disruption. Mm-hmm. And so music does that for me. Reading the scripture does that for me. Engaging in a small group conversation in an intentional kind of way does that for me. Like finding ways and spaces and times just to give you that little reminder to open. But knowing that you have to be open and actually being open requires courage. It requires strength. It requires all of the things, because Joseph has to make a big, bold, risky decision. So does Mary. Mm-hmm. So does Elizabeth. I mean, like, every one of these figures in the story, they have to be courageous to say, like, yes. Mm-hmm. I mean, Mary, like, nothing is impossible.
Yeah.
You have to believe that. And part of that is like acting on it. And so I think create spaces to open yourself to the interruption, but then it's recognizing that you have to have the courage. And I think that requires community. Mm-hmm. That's the misfit angle of Rudolph, right? Mm-hmm. Rudolph doesn't become Rudolph without Hermie. And whoever that weird, crazy guy is, that Yukon Cornelius, right? But they need each other to become courageous. Mary needed Elizabeth to become courageous. That's my favorite surprise of Christmas story, by the way, is that the Mary and Elizabeth, they become the most important figures in this Advent journey. Mm-hmm. And that duo isn't a duo of men or brothers. It's two women. Mm-hmm. They become the prime movers in this story. Mm-hmm. And you think about other people like this, like sets like this. You think about Ishmael and Isaac. Mm-hmm. Think about Cain and Abel. You think about Jacob and Esau. Those are relationships marked by sibling rivalry.
Mm-hmm.
And here you have Mary and Elizabeth, and they're not like rivals.
Mm-hmm.
Elizabeth opens the door to her younger cousin, and instead of saying like, "I'm going to steal that blessing back from you," she calls her the mother of her Lord. Uh-huh. And then you have the more predictable duo, which is, John the Baptist and Jesus. They're not brothers, but they're siblings. I mean, they're connected, they're family. And typically the older would not like the younger.
Hmm.
But here you have even John in the womb leaping for joy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. At the encounter of his younger, sibling, his second half. And I think that is such a surprising twist to anybody that has like scriptural knowledge of like how God works through these kinds of sets and through these kinds of coupling and our couples and what does that mean that the Christmas story starts with two women and then two like infants or two boys, and they act differently than all of the other people that have gone before them. I think that's a powerful surprise to see too, to be open to those kinds of things.
I love that. The making space for it, the being courageous to say yes to it, but then also having the community support you through it. And Scott, it sounds like this book is a good resource as well. Absolutely. For anyone right now that's looking for a little something different this Advent, maybe perhaps a focus back on the true meaning of Christmas, but in a different way and perhaps a surprising way. And so if someone's interested in picking up this book, I know we're a couple weeks into Advent, but there's still time. Where could they find it, Scott?
You can find it really anywhere. Amazon is an easy place to find it. This is a Market Square a book. So Market Square Publishing is a great, or Market Square Books is a great place to get it. You can also order it from Church of the Resurrection if you'd like to. We have a book here, but you can get it really anywhere. And it's on Kindle, I think digital as well. But I've been directing people to Amazon because that seems to be the easiest place right now to go to get anything.
Yep.
And it'll be there before you know it.
Well, it'll be there before you know it. That's right.
Well, friends, this has been Scott Krostek and his book, Advent, A Season of Surprises.
And remember, friends, share this podcast with someone you know, family member, a friend, someone you work with, or even go to church with, and let it be an encouragement to them as well. And remember, until next time, we are better together. God bless.